Welcome to the show. Today we're featuring conversations from the AFSEA Washington, D.C. Health Summit from late July. First, we hear from Dave Bowens, the CIO of the Defense Health Agency.
Some of you may have heard that we had a contract award announcement, obviously. And so I'll provide a little bit of background on our approach and while we're excited about the milestone that we reached this week. The team did a tremendous job in awarding this contract. I know they've been working on it for quite a long time. Mr. Miller and his team, I think, did a very excellent job in going through the process. And coming to the conclusion that they did. I was not part of that team. That was an independent team that evaluated the proposals, put out the RFP, and managed the acquisition. But I did watch from afar, and I was very impressed. So the Military Health System is an organization that has global responsibilities. And the electronic health record is a critical enabler for supporting and sustaining the medical readiness of our military forces wherever they live and work. It is literally the weapon system for the military health system. Over the last 13 years, the EHR that we've used has been a vital piece of our care coordination efforts as we move patients, often in a matter of hours or days, from Iraq, Afghanistan to Landstuhl, Germany, and then back home to the United States. Our clinical teams could track the status of these patients up to the point of arrival and effectively manage their health care needs throughout this process. We think we do this better than anybody in the world. We have mined the data from our electronic health record to help us with our research efforts and to continuously improve the care that we provide to those who are in harm's way. This has resulted in the highest combat survival rate in the history of warfare. Approximately 150,000 military and civilian medical professionals serving in military clinics, hospitals, deployed locations, and other settings around the globe rely on our current system. These men and women provide care to 9.5 million Americans, service members, their families, survivors, military retirees, and the family members of military retirees who serve and live around the globe. Even apart from wartime requirements, the patients we serve are frequently on the move, and our medical professionals are also very frequently on the move. For this reason, the Department of Defense has long been at the vanguard of developing and using electronic health records well ahead of the civilian sector. Our mission required it. Over the last decade, however, advances in commercial health information technology, as well as the complex and rapidly evolving nature of medicine, required us to rethink how we remain a leader in using health information technology to support our mission. We owe it to the beneficiaries we serve and the medical professionals we support to provide them with the best tools to do their job. We are doing that with this announcement. A commercial product gives us the opportunity to take advantage of private sector innovation and allows us to leverage ongoing advances in health information technology as part of the vendor's own commercial interest to remain a market leader. The selection of the Leidos Cerner Accenture team represents the culmination of several years of work to define the right requirements and then to solicit, to review, and award a contract for a state-of-the-art, best-of-suite solution designed to meet the future needs of our providers, our patients, and our leaders. And my thanks, and Lieutenant General Rob's thanks, go to everyone who has been involved in this process for getting us to this moment. And that includes our internal workforce, as well as input from all of you in the contractor community who participated in the interactions and the engagements that took place throughout this process. It made the RFP a better process. It was a very competitive process, and that it was resulted in one that is good for the government, good for the people that we serve, and good for the taxpayer as well. The EHR will produce a significant amount in usability for our clinicians and our entire medical workforce, advance our ability to share information across our systems of care, and further enhance our ability to monitor and to improve that care that we deliver. And our patients will be better able to monitor their own health, communicate with our providers, and therefore becoming more informed and engaged on their own. Rather than developing a customized software solution unique to the DoD, as we often did for our current and previous generation of EHRs, the department purchased a commercial product. This approach brings advantages to the department by delivering a proven product already successfully functioning in the private sector. It also establishes a process for introducing regular system upgrades that ensures that our technology stays current with advances in American medicine and health information technology. The EHR also offers an advanced system for securely sharing electronic health information with our partners, both in the VA and with the private sector providers. We are under no illusions about the work ahead of us. As Churchill once said about something much bigger than an EHR deployment, this isn't the beginning of the end, it's the end of the beginning. And I would add to that, the real work is yet to start. We will deploy the EHR in phases, starting with the initial deployment in the Pacific Northwest area beginning in December of 2016. Throughout the deployment cycle, we will provide updates on training, tools, and lessons learned to keep the workforce informed about the status, process, and next steps of implementation. The prep work for that activity in the Pacific Northwest has already begun. For the Defense Health Agency, health information technology is a shared service and an area that I am fortunate to lead. And our healthcare IT team has been long in preparing for this transition. There are a number of moving parts necessary to successful implementation that involve all of the operational elements that we have in the DHA. These include the IT infrastructure that's got to be in place and operational, performing clinical and business process engineering, and above all, standardizing our clinical processes ahead of the deployment and reflecting those standard processes in the new electronic health record. Coordinating communications with our internal clinical teams, our patients, and our external stakeholders, ensuring access to care during the transition process is not compromised, and ensuring that our health information, above all, remains secure. Going forward, successful deployment will be driven by active engagement, communication and feedback among our healthcare IT staff, our clinicians, and the Defense Health Management System team. We are one team, but for today, as Dr. Woodson has said, this major modernization initiative for the military health system makes our health system better, stronger, and more relevant for the future. So now let me talk about some of the other activities that are ongoing, particularly in the nature of innovation and other things we're doing within the DHA and the military health system. We are in month 22 of the Defense Health Agency, and we are on track to reach full operating capability on October 1st of this year. We have stood up 10 shared services, streamlined processes in both our clinical and business operations, and standardized things across the enterprise where it has made sense, while preserving the uniqueness of each service's medical capabilities. Full operating capability is by no means a finish line, and it's not for us to declare a victory, but it is a milestone. We are a combat support agency. We are here to meet the needs of the combatant commanders of the Defense Department and the services, so in some ways it's up for our customers to judge whether or not we have met our goals, but we have made some significant progress. I have seen that firsthand as the Director of Health IT for the DHA. We are consolidating healthcare IT infrastructure. We are working with the Defense Information Systems Agency and other partners to ensure the right infrastructure is in place to support the rollout of the electronic health record and the modernization of our health record system. And we're driving redundancy out of the organization and improving efficiency. And we are establishing a platform for ongoing innovation.
We had to take a break. Today we're featuring conversations from the FCA Washington, D.C. Health Summit from late July. We're listening to Dave Bowens, the CIO of the Defense Health Agency. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Today, we're featuring conversations from the FCA Washington, D.C. Health Summit from late July. We are listening to Dave Bowens, the CIO of the Defense Health Agency.
Another major milestone we achieve also on Wednesday with the services sign-off of our concept of operations for the healthcare IT shared service. This is one of the criteria that we've got to achieve for full operating capability, and we were actually successful in getting the services to sign that off Wednesday morning. You heard Mark Gooch on my staff speak earlier today about some of our work. The proliferation of technology to include health data has made this an increasingly connected world, and one in which everyone, not just physicians, has a tremendous amount of information at their fingertips. And what was previously standalone medical equipment will also be wired. The new EHR I just spoke about will vastly increase the number and the types of devices connected to our networks, even to include things like maybe the patient bed or other things that we refer to collectively as the Internet of Things. The migration of American medicine toward greater use of telemedicine is also part of this fabric. Personal health devices and software that help promote fitness and wellness, support tobacco cessation, or help individuals manage chronic illnesses are multiplying very rapidly. Recent FDA certifications of laboratory services that are ordered by the patient instead of the physician will require us to rethink how we connect with distant laboratory services, even when our physicians have not necessarily ordered them. And sitting above all this expansion of devices, products, and IT services in the ever-looming issue of security are becoming more and more relevant. Medical information is valuable, much more so than, say, credit card information. Theft of healthcare information has many adverse consequences, as we've all seen. The violation of personal privacy is one, the potential for identity theft and subsequent fraud is another, and has been clear from the recent massive data breach at the Office of Personnel Management, there are national security threats that also need to be considered. The DoD is going to be very vigilant about these threats, and anyone who seeks to partner with us needs to be equally vigilant. We are actually going to ensure this. That is, we will not only benefit from DoD information standards being applied to our partners, but those partners and their other customers will benefit by a higher level of security discipline and standards being applied across the board. We are devoting increasing resources and attention to our security procedures, our certification, and our anti-penetration efforts, and we are looking even more closely at security issues in the areas of medical equipment, facility equipment, other connected devices, and the vulnerabilities of all of those kinds of equipment. As you can imagine, it is the one area that truly keeps me up at night and my staff also awake at nights. And I can tell you for a fact that this is most certainly true. Let me make a final comment and then I think we can open the floor for questions. As the market explodes with potentially connected devices, we also have an obligation to bring the patient along with us. The benefits from these technological advances are multiplied when we prioritize patient engagement and health literacy. Right now, the military health system is also undertaking an effort to increase the transparency of our data, of our health data as a system. We are moving from healthcare to health, from focusing on the treatment of healthcare, the provision of healthcare treatment to the maintenance of health. We want to encourage our patients to be smart consumers, to ask the right questions when they visit their provider, and to know how our system or the network providers that we use to serve them perform against their peers. There is a trend, and it is moving forward toward greater public awareness of what we were doing with the information we have and incorporating feedback from the patient. General Rob, Dr. Woodson, and the Armed Services Surgeons General all have committed to DoD being a leader in healthcare transparency. And we will use our technology to explain how we are doing to our patients and to the public. Let me conclude by reminding you all that the military health system is a very special institution. It is a very special institution. It is more than just a hospital system. It has a public health component. It has a health benefit plan. It has an education and training mission and an amazing medical research and development portfolio that is changing how medicine is practiced on land, on or under the sea, in the air, and even in space. It is very, very special. Readiness remains at the center of our mission, to go anywhere at any time. We are dedicated to providing America with a medically ready force and also a ready medical force. The last 13 years of war have seen many challenges and many successes. We could not have done it without your help from the industry. As a result of your efforts, we now have stronger and lighter equipment. We have payoffs from investments in medical technology, medical research such as blood clotting, and better battlefield care. We have advanced aeromedical evacuation capabilities, we have advanced information systems, and we have products and devices that have transformed the delivery of healthcare here at home and overseas. The diversity of threats to national security today requires to keep our skills up, whether those threats are from non-state actors, state actors, or from disease. Dr. Woodson likes to say, readiness is not a pickup game, which is to say that we can't turn it on at a moment's notice. We've got to be ready all the time. The MHS is indispensable to our national and global security and to global humanitarian efforts. We are the world's 911. As we modernize our health information systems and infrastructure, we never forget the purpose to which we dedicate these resources and to the very special people who we are privileged to serve. Those men and women who served and who currently serve and have served in the defense of our nation.
We have to take a break. Today we're featuring conversations from the FCA Washington, D.C. Health Summit from late July. We're listening to Dave Bowens, the CIO of the Defense Health Agency. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Today, we're featuring conversations from the FCA Washington, D.C. Health Summit from late July. We're listening to Dave Bowens, the CIO of the Defense Health Agency.
Deputy Secretary Gibson told us this morning that you're about to take a quantum leap forward on Joint Legacy Viewer. In terms of capacity, I think is what he was referencing. Can you take us through where you are on that, what that quantum leap is, and what's next with the...
Quantum leap in capacity?
As I recall, he said 13,000 users so far, and that's about to take a quantum leap forward. I'm not sure what else he would have meant besides capacity.
Yeah, I guess I'd want to know a little bit more about the context, but it's a great opportunity, though. I do want to make a point, and that is, as I have read some of the news articles that have come up over the last couple of days, I think there's still a misconception out there about the way we are currently interoperable with the Veterans Association or Veterans Administration. Let me be very clear. We transmit to the VA millions and millions of fields of data each and every day. The VA healthcare people get data on the healthcare of the people that we are serving, and the VA benefits people get benefits data on our retirees and our servicemen as they transition over to the VA. We are 100% committed to be interoperable with the VA. We've defined what that means. We have managed our information so that where we are basically speaking different language, we are developing standards to translate data back and forth between the terminology that we use and the terminology that the VA uses. In some instances, these standards are already well-defined and well-known to the industry. In other instances, the VA and the DOD are working together with the Office of the National Healthcare Coordinator of the White House to determine what those standards are, develop those standards, and implement them, and hopefully they'll be used then around the nation in the sharing of healthcare data between other healthcare systems. So we are continuing our move down there. We are very far along. We're sharing lots of data, and certainly with the new EHR, that data sharing is going to be probably better, faster, and more complete.
Great. We have an additional question here.
Hi, and thanks for your thoughts earlier. My name is Skip Fleshman. I'm with a venture capital firm in Silicon Valley, and we focus a lot on digital health and technologies. And I'm wondering how you engage with technical innovation, either large contractors or specifically startups.
How do we engage with technical innovation?
Well, how do you evaluate and engage?
Hopefully you all heard from my CTO this morning on how we look at innovation and how we handle innovation. We recognize that innovation is very important, and we don't want to stifle that. And so we have a component of our organization called the Advanced Technology Division that has a defined purpose to evaluate new technologies. We go to Silicon Valley, we talk to people, we read articles, we go to conferences, and we also have the ability then to bring that technology into our organization and to pilot test it in a very rapid fashion. We have our own R&D facility. We have our own R&D infrastructure where we can put new components of software, hardware into place very rapidly and test those. This has resulted in a couple of things actually being able to be transferred out to the battlefield and used by our soldiers. So we look at a part of the organization is focusing on drugs and chemical kind of innovation. Part of it focuses on IT innovation. Part of it focuses on things like communications, networking, those kinds of things. So if you have technology you want us to take a look at, Mr. Googe is your guy.
Excellent. Do we have other questions?
There's a question way in the back, I think.
Okay. We'll get this gentleman here, and then I'll come back there.
Good afternoon. My name is Lieutenant Commander Michael Banyas. I'm in the U.S. Public Health Service, and my family and I use Walter Reed. That's our primary medical home. And my question is when will the patients start seeing the impact of the implementation in their care? And what do these changes of the new EHR system, what do they actually mean for the patient? Like, will my provider actually start using email to communicate with their patients? You know, just an example, will my ophthalmologist be able to, you know, not be able to scan documents anymore into the EHR? You know, it's just like little things like that.
Okay, so, let me talk first about the when, and then I will talk about the how more from a conceptual standpoint than a specifics, because I am not all that familiar with the detailed functionality in the awarded system. So I was not part of the review team, but I can tell you what kinds of things we are looking for, we were looking for from our vendors as we did the evaluation. And I can speak from my own experience as well. So the plan going forward, and this is no secret, contract award will be, you know, was announced the other night. We'll be working with a vendor about over the next year or so to basically take our clinical process standards that we've had literally hundreds of clinicians working on over the last probably 9 to 12 months, and tailoring the software to incorporate those standard processes. As we go around and we talk to people who have done electronic health record implementations, the one uniform comment that we always get is you've got to standardize your clinical processes. And for some of these institutions, that is a big culture change. I will tell you, for the DoD, it is a monstrous culture change. We do everything differently. Everything in the DoD we do differently. Army, Navy, Air Force, I mean, I've seen it all. So to get all of our clinicians together and agree on over 700 clinical processes that we're going to standardize is very significant. So there's this period where we'll be testing, we'll be implementing in the software our clinical processes for deployment. Late next year in 2016, we'll begin deployment at the Pacific Northwest. That will include Oak Harbor and Bremerton hospitals for the Navy, Madigan Hospital for the Army, and Fairchild Air Force Base, which I believe has a clinic. After that, there is a straw man plan to roll deployment around the continental U.S. and also overseas, but the caveat is that plan is open for input by the selected vendor if there are better ideas that the vendor has to our straw man schedule, then we'll certainly take a look at that. Things that you'll begin to see will be things like, you'll have, I belong to a physician group in Annapolis, and they have a system, and I have the little tablet app, and I can order my pharmaceuticals online, I can email my doctor and things like that. So all those kinds of things will certainly be embodied in the new electronic health record. There'll be lots of security things. I don't know if there are any of our own providers here, but I can tell you that they should be able to see a drastic improvement in uptime, in response time, and things like that. The clinical processes will be uniform. We'll have uniform data collection. We'll have, from a management standpoint, a uniform way of doing clinical analytics, comparing the performance of our military treatment facilities against each other and against the commercial marketplace. Improve quality, improve patient satisfaction, hopefully shorter lengths of stay, all those kinds of things. And that's just the tip of the iceberg.
We actually have a couple of questions, and I've got you right back here in the far back corner.
Hi, Pam from Zoex. As far as the advanced research and development arm, I'm interested in what you're doing with aerospace medicine for space. For it's crossing over to the commercial sector now, and I'm interested in knowing what are they doing with the international partners, what type of translational type of thing do you have going for the international partners that are in space already, and the capture of that type of information in healthcare records that could extend out to health tourism?
Right. Relative to the space comment, I think that's probably more of a purview of NASA than it is of us. I know that we, in the next couple of weeks, we hold a big healthcare, a DoD healthcare IT symposium, and one of our guest keynote speakers is going to be a former NASA astronaut who's going to talk to us about that. He actually had a very bad accident and had to use the services of the military health system to sort of put himself back together. So they're doing a lot of that. I think some of that is trickling back through the line services rather than the medical community. And to be quite honest with you, that's about all I know about that. Relative to your comment on our international partners, I can tell you that this time yesterday, I was sitting down with the Surgeon General of the Armed Forces of Canada, who came down to visit. And we spent all afternoon with him. He was talking about what they're doing in Canada, how they have a system that they use the provincial systems in Canada. We were talking about what we're doing to standardize our clinical practices, what we're doing to standardize our healthcare information technology, you know, how we're running the finances and all of that. So it was a very interesting discussion, and we regularly dialogue with our counterparts from the NATO countries and other countries as they come in. I know the Brits have been in, obviously the Canadians have been in, I think General Rob's been down to Australia, I'm not sure, but there is a lot of interaction among the leaders of the defense medical communities internationally.
Thank you, Mr. Bowen. Todd Schwartzrock, NIH. Very happy to be here. You have mentioned a couple of themes with the announcement. Certainly a move towards standardization in the healthcare space, a mainstreaming of many of the functions, maybe the terminology as well. And I'm just curious to know, from your perspective, do you see the uniqueness of the military health system persisting? Is there a move towards de-emphasizing the uniqueness? And where does that lead going forward for military health in terms of a core competency?
I think that we will always have situations of uniqueness. And I will tell you, it is because of a couple factors. One, it is because of the way that we do business. Things like having to operate in a harsh environment, having to operate in a low-com, no-com environment. So you get sort of all the stuff that goes on in the theater and elsewhere. The other uniqueness I think that will be to retain to some degree is the uniqueness of the service-specific ways in which some of the services work. For instance, when we train our technicians and our corpsmen, the Navy guys have to receive extra training because they are trained to a higher level because they operate on a ship where there is no backup, there is no physician. You know, if they have to do surgery on a submarine, you know, they're sort of trained to do that. So we will have that uniqueness. Now, from the standpoint of a hospital, typical hospital inpatient kinds of things, I think we're trying to standardize as much as possible across the services, and we're trying as much as possible to use the best practices from the commercial world. That's one of the reasons that I think I mentioned why we why we were interested in bringing a commercial product in, because ostensibly a commercial product should embody the best practices of all of the previous commercial customers. So there will be that standardization. From an IT standpoint and an infrastructure standpoint, we are going to standardize from the user's fingertips to the data center and everything in between. When I talk to my colleagues in the commercial world around the country, they've done this years ago. We are so far behind in this area, and the EHR actually gives us sort of a kick in the pants to step up our efforts and do that. We are going to do more centralized management. We're going to lock down our systems. We're going to go from 5 help desks to 1. All these kinds of things that the commercial world has done years ago. I remember we were doing the same thing a little bit in the FAA on help desks, and I said, well, you know, let me talk to Dell, because we bought a lot of Dell equipment at the time. And I said, how many help desks do you have? I said, we have like a dozen help desks. I said, how many help desks do you have, serving your customers in the United States? And they said, well, we don't have any. I said, what do you mean you don't have any? If I call the help desk, don't I get an answer? Yeah, you get an answer, but that help desk serves both Canada and the United States. So, yeah, I mean, that's the degree to which the commercial world has driven standardization and infrastructure optimization, and we're trying to get there as fast as we possibly can. Appreciate the question.
This is Tom Catania with CenturyLink. Question for you is dealing with infrastructure consolidation. Mm-hmm. You just touched on it with the data centers and the help desk, and you have disparate networks out there from the Air Force and the Navy that you absorbed when DHA came into existence. What is the status today of where DHA is with that?
With standardization?
Yeah, in those three areas, the help desk, the data centers, and the networks.
Okay, well, we have a project called Desktop to Data Center that involves standardization of a number of infrastructure and sort of related infrastructure components. First thing we've done is we have migrated most of the DHA to the Defense Health, what they call the military email system, the DISA email system. Like most of the services are on, I can now get on the email directory and I can see, people across the services, both inside and outside the DHA. I can see people at the Pentagon, I can see all over. So standardized email is one. We've developed a standard around what our desktop platform will look like. That's been agreed to by all the services. It goes up through level 3, 0, 1, 2, 3, with the EHR and the service-specific applications basically being levels 4 and 5. But from a hardware standpoint, all the way up through the utility software, productivity software, all of that stuff, that's all standardized. A real issue for us has been the network connectivity from the outside world to the base, and from the base point of presence to the MTF that is in the base. We are often affected by line service maintenance of circuits and routers and all of that stuff, which they sometimes do without telling us, and therefore the hospital goes down and we can't do that. So we are part of the bigger picture of infrastructure standardization within the DoD and infrastructure consolidation. We participate in the Joint Information Enterprise project that the DoD is working on. As General Rob says, we will have our own lane on the DoD information highway. It will be just for medical and medical equipment, and so we're working toward that with a project called the MedCOI, the Community of Interest. And that does so many things for me. It takes my stuff off the line networks. It means that I no longer have to certify a piece of equipment 3 times for use in the system. Army has to certify it, Navy has to certify it, and Air Force has to certify it. That is a massive improvement for us. Millions of dollars a year that we save in avoiding that. We have one designated authorization authority for the Defense Health Agency. You're talking to them, that's me. And so I will sign off on, if they want to buy a blood analyzer and put it in a Tripler in Hawaii, and then the next day we want to buy one and stick it in a Walter Reed, then once it's authenticated we can put it in anywhere in the network. This is going to lead to a standardization around medical equipment. Very significant effort. We have guessed that this is a pet a pet subject of mine? Okay. We have over 600,000 different pieces of medical equipment, and of those 600,000 pieces of equipment, 60,000, we have 60,000 different ones, if you understand that. So we need to, again, as most commercial health systems have done long ago, we need to standardize our buying practices around medical equipment, you know, putting the stuff on the network, getting it working. Once I know that I can put it on the network, then I don't have to worry about where I place it. And so we're working on all those dimensions. We're standardizing our local area networks within the MTFs. I talked about the MTF to the base, and we're working with DISA, and we're part of the JRSS process and the Joint Information Enterprise that the DoD is rolling out. We're actually sort of the tip of the spear on some of that stuff. So meet regularly with the services and with the DoD CIO on playing a part in the larger DoD efforts. Okay, I hope that helps.
We have to take a break. Today we're featuring conversations from the FCA Washington, D.C. Health Summit from late July. We just heard from Dave Bowens, the CIO of the Defense Health Agency. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Today we're featuring conversations from the FCA Washington, D.C. Health Summit from late July. In this part of the show, we hear from Mark Goodidge, the Chief Technology Officer and Deputy Director for Innovation and Advanced Technology for the Health IT Directorate at the Defense Health Agency.
So one of our biggest things, right, is getting the message out to see what we need to do and how we can work in a public-private partnership together. We are a large consumer of the things that you do, right, the services you provide, so we can execute to our mission, right, of delivering the finest care to those who are entrusted to us, and even carrying that forward to the data we provide to the VA to allow that continuation of care to happen. We are a very 360 type of organization. I guess when I look at Internet of Things, when we talk about my daily activities, kind of most of mine is asking that framing question, right, the problem space question, and then to look at, you know, the data questions. Data analytics and predictive modeling are a lot, and is big in our focus. So I have a couple buckets that we do for the quadruple aim to look at healthcare to health and lower costs and provide readiness, right, is mobility, cognitive analysis, data proliferation, and then really the Internet of Things, mobile wars. When we call it mobile wars, it just means a lot of people think of mobility as just the phone, right? And there's a lot of FDA-connected devices. There's a lot of devices coming in and out. And when we look at a patient or a person, right, they're a data pub sub consumer anymore. If we look at cars today versus cars just 10 years ago, there's so much more connected to anything we do. And I might see the same thing with how do we create an ecosystem that allows a safe, secure, and deliberate messaging of the right data at the right time to the right person to affect a change in the positive, right, to prevent a negative outcome. And that's going to be a large challenge. And with partners such as you guys, with consortiums that really drive for that standard architecture kind of things, that we all can say, oh, that's a green apple. There, I have some good semantics on that interoperability, because now I have a language which we both understand, right? So I've said it before, that's probably the biggest one for me, is that semantic interoperability. If you look at the President's Council that they did in PCAST 1 and 2, they really talk about that from our healthcare vertical, is that, and then we work with GW a little while ago to talk about that, or Georgetown to talk about that, and then how we would look at PCAST and how we would do semantic interoperability. So that was a five-year plan. So we've been really chunking down on that one to look at normalized health languages to allow us to not only operate here, but for our area in a global situation, right? We could be deployed anytime, any place with any coalition partners, and we need to have that semantic interoperability so that if and when one of our members are injured, that data translated to the next role and next area is clear and understandable, right? At the same time, that affects the change when they come back here, as if we either pass off directly to another partner or probably trauma centers, it's what the VA provides us for some of the things, that they have clear and legible reports on that condition of that patient, and we can proactively manage them before that patient gets here. So that's what really kind of keeps me up. How are we doing with the 360? Do we have policy strategies? I mean, we obviously have the strategies. Do we have the policies like patient-generated data? That's a big one, right? Our system of record notification. So we've been working on that to really drive a policy that allows me to, right, apply the IT to that use case or that scenario that we're doing in those workflows to create a different ecosystem for our customers than tomorrow, but inform them of those challenges and risks that they might encounter with connected devices.
Thank you. Actually, before we turn to Dr. Hamilton, I did want to ask you one question. One of the things that you had talked about was healthcare to health, and I want to make sure that everyone understands what you mean by that.
Oh, sure. So apologies on that one. So I'll give it a lot because my family's, right, we have that trait for diabetes, right? So diabetes, if you know, is a very horrible illness. It affects about everything in the body, every system. So, you know, what are the pre-indicators or indicators for, as we talk about clinical decision support and practice guidelines, could I as a person understand without having to be a clinician, what are the steps I need to do to take my health care and have a healthier tomorrow so that I am affecting the change of my outcomes as I live longer, and we do, we're living longer and better lives. But comes that is conditions and artifacts that will present themselves versus what was happening before with people who were, you know, not as long lifespans, right? So now we're stretching that a lot, and that comes to the bigger thing about paying, right? And how we do the forecasting of those patients and those conditions. So healthcare to health is us. If given the opportunity, you will do everything in your power to change a health outcome to a positive versus I'll see you in the ER, I'll see you in the ICU, or I'll see you down in internal medicine for the next X amount of time until I resolve that condition. So let's prevent conditions before they happen, right? Health promotion, right? Health. And I think when we talk about Internet of Things, we talk about connected devices, we'll see a lot of dramatic changes that we have already with those.
That's all the time we have for today. In this show, we featured conversations from the FCA Washington, D.C. Health Summit from late July. We started off the show by listening to a speech by Dave Bowens, the CIO of the Defense Health Agency. Then we heard from Mark Goodidge, the Chief Technology Officer and Deputy Director for Innovation and Advanced Technology for Health IT Directorate at the Defense Health Agency. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you've been listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.